Our next guest is the chief of infectious disease at the Hospital of Central Connecticut. We've had her on a couple of times, although it's been probably maybe a month since the last time we had her on.
I think so, just about a month.
Yeah. So we welcome back to the show Dr. Virginia Bylock. Doctor, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. I would imagine you're a pretty busy person.
Yes, I'm very busy.
Well, all the more reason why we appreciate you being on with us this morning. So we've had you on a couple of times, and one of the things that really resonates from our conversations, and I even hear this from listeners who call up, or even when they see when we talk out in public, they say, geez, love when you have Dr. Virginia Bylock on. She's so informative. And one of the things that you really stress is, or at least that you've stressed in the last two interviews that we've had here, is not to panic. You still stick by that, I would assume, correct?
Yes. I think everybody needs to be prudent and concerned, but people shouldn't be panicking. And we are asking people to please socially isolate yourselves. Maintain your social distance. Do not congregate in large groups. We will all get through this eventually, and the more we avoid social gatherings, etc., the sooner it will be. But as healthcare worker, I have to ask all your listeners to please stay home to the extent possible.
We are social distancing, and that's one of the things that I emphasize. We still have a couple of vulnerable sectors of our population, though, right? These are people who are over the age of, let's say, 70 or 75. I'll even say 70. Forget 75. That age demographic, as well as those of any age who happen to have a pre-existing condition, particularly respiratory. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. The majority of deaths are in people over the age of about 70. Mm-hmm. However, younger people have died of this illness, especially if they have underlying conditions. Diabetes is a big underlying condition. Lung disease is another underlying condition. So if you have diabetes, maintaining good control of your blood sugars, very important. Many physician practices will now do a telehealth visit to help check in with you. So if you have any concerns about your diabetes or how to better control your lung disease, find out if you can contact your doctor.
Yeah, really good advice. Over the weekend, I laugh at this, but, you know, I know maybe it's not such a funny thing. I sneezed in my home, and my wife looked at me, you know, and she's like, oh, and I'm like, calm down, easy. Just because you have a you cough or you sneeze or have a runny nose doesn't necessarily mean you have the coronavirus.
That is true, especially this time of year,
right,
when allergies are starting to arise.
Exactly.
So, again, for mild symptoms, I want you to stay home, socially isolate. If you start to get sicker, certainly contact your healthcare provider, but, you know, contact someone first. Don't go right to the emergency room.
Yeah, because they're pretty overwhelmed there.
They're overwhelmed. We're taking care of very sick patients. You can get tested if you have significant symptoms. Hartford Healthcare has what we call the command center or the hotline, where you can call and get some advice if you think that you could have COVID infection.
Doc, you mentioned significant symptoms. Can you list any of those so that we don't send everybody into mass hysteria because they've sneezed or coughed once or twice? Particularly, like you said, I mean, really, this time of year, we're in April now, there are allergies that's really start to pop up here. What are some of the symptoms, though, that somebody should look for that will differentiate from a typical flu or allergies, for example?
Well, the major symptoms of COVID-19 that result in people getting hospitalized are fever, significant cough, and often it's very significant, and shortness of breath. So if you're starting to develop those type of symptoms, it's a good idea to either contact your provider or one of the hotlines that various healthcare centers have, such as Hartford Healthcare, and get some advice. Those symptoms mirror those of the flu, however, but I can tell you that influenza activity has significantly decreased at this time of year. So if you have symptoms of significant cough, high fevers, shortness of breath, myalgias, which is achiness, at this point in time, coronavirus becomes a significant concern because of the decrease in influenza.
Is it, well, and it's hard to get, obtain a test, right? Aren't there, is there a shortage of tests here in Connecticut? Or, I know you need to get a, you need to see your doctor to get a prescription for a test or to be referred to for a test, correct?
Well, that's one way to do it. Testing can be done. We are still trying to test people with significant symptoms because there are not an abundance of tests, and it takes many days to get a test back. And by many, I mean 4 or 5, sometimes a little bit more. So we can't test everybody who has a sneeze. But yes, you do need a doctor's order, a provider's order, and you can get that either from your doctor or at Hartford Healthcare. Our hotline has providers that can order the test and send you to one of our testing centers.
What is that hotline, if you don't mind?
The COVID-19 hotline.
Yep.
There are two of them. The first is 860-972-8100. Or there's a toll-free number of 833-621-0600. And we recommend calling the hotline if you have concerns that you could have COVID infection.
Go ahead.
And they can either recommend that you get tested or that you stay home and self-isolate yourself.
I'll make sure I repeat those numbers at the conclusion. Now, we've heard that as the warmer weather starts to prevail and starts to dominate on a more daily basis, as opposed to, you know, at once every few days where you kind of get in March and in early April. But once we start getting into late April and early May, it starts to become warm on a more consistent basis. Is it true that that's an opportunity where the coronavirus dies? Or if it's kind of, is there a possibility that it comes back? We've heard that speculation. So then really in that case, it's really only putting the coronavirus to rest through the summer, and if it's going to come back in the cooler weather of the fall. You must have heard something like this.
Well, I've heard all of those theories. I think it's too early to say yet what the effect of warmer weather will be. Experts are predicting the possibility of a second wave. But if we can just, as you've heard, flatten the curve, and that is decrease the number of people who require hospitalization, require intensive care unit, that will help our hospitals, but it will also give us some time to analyze data concerning medications. There are ongoing studies looking at the effectiveness of various medications, and it also gives people who are developing a vaccine some time to work. And fall seems a little early to have a vaccine, but if we can just flatten this curve by social distancing, that would help us a lot.
Yeah, and I agree that I think fall would be a little ambitious to have a vaccine. We're hearing it could be the early part of actually 2021. A lot can happen between now and then. And of course, we want to make sure that those numbers are as minimal as possible. And I like what you suggest as far as, you know, social distancing and not gathering in groups of five or more. We've heard of test drugs, though, a combination of the, chloroquine or the malaria drug combined with that Z-Pak drug, and it's been working so far. Although of course it takes a lot more testing to get approval, and I would presume that that's what takes the longest amount of time. But based on what you've seen from it, is it a step in the right direction?
You know, it's hard to know. The data are very limited. They are small numbers of patients. And I know that there are large institutions trying to collect a much larger database. We don't know when those drugs should be given. Should they be given up front? Is it too late when you're in the hospital? We just don't have answers to those questions yet. We're hoping for some. Again, there are large studies ongoing to try to sort these questions out. We are using these medications, but yet we don't have good efficacy data. We're hopeful that they work, but without good trials, it's hard to know for sure.
Yeah.
The majority of people are going to get better without any treatment. There are many people who don't know they have the virus because they have no symptoms. The vast majority of people that get this are going to get better, but unfortunately, some people just don't do well with this infection. And again, we don't know why some people do less well than others. Not all 80-year-olds end up dying of this disease. We've discharged 80-year-olds from the hospital after having this disease. So it's a virus that we are just getting to know at this point.
Yeah, and I've heard some, is there some places where they've used that testing drug and it's worked perfectly? You know, people have actually, it turned the person, you know, the patient that had the coronavirus, it turned them around. But it can't be confirmed as an actual vaccination yet because, what you just said, there needs to be more testing done. But when you're in that predicament where this person needs it, they have a temperature of 104. I mean, it's a person that could be dead in days. I guess you'll try anything at that point.
Absolutely. That we are using the medication. We are hopeful it's beneficial. But again, because one person got better after receiving the medication doesn't mean they got better because of the medication. They just could have been on the way to getting better. We are giving these drugs, and we're very hopeful that they're going to work. There's not a whole lot of toxicity to the short courses that we're giving, and we're hopeful they work, but we're waiting for the data.
We have Dr. Virginia Byluck with us right now, Chief of Infectious Diseases over at the Hospital of Central Connecticut. You had said something just a moment ago that really caught my attention, and that's really being asymptomatic, where I guess theoretically a person can be walking around and going to work and running a couple of errands and, you know, I was going to say mowing the lawn, but no one's mowing their lawn right now, but, working in the garden, raking some leaves left over from last year on a nice sunny Saturday afternoon, and they could, theoretically have the coronavirus and not be aware of it. That's one of the scary parts, though, because, you know, they could take a drive to go see mom who's quarantined because she's over 70 and say, hey, mom, let me pick up some things for you so that you don't have to leave the house. And then because they're a carrier and asymptomatic, they could possibly transfer that virus to their elder parent. That's what makes this so scary, correct?
Yeah, it is. That is scary. And we don't know exactly how many people are carrying this virus, but we do know that there are people who have no symptoms and have the virus and can spread to other people. And again, that is why even if you're feeling perfectly fine, we're asking you to really socially distance yourself to prevent yourself from getting sick if you don't have the virus, but as well as if you were to be carrying the virus, to not spread it to others. And that's why senior living facilities, skilled nursing facilities are all limiting who can see their loved ones. And it's unpleasant that this is happening. Nursing homes are doing a lot with video chatting and trying to keep the elderly connected to their loved ones, but it's not the same. But
not.
The sooner we all socially distance ourselves, the sooner we'll be able to calm this down and hopefully get back to our normal lives.
Let's dispel a few rumors, if we may. Is this airborne? If somebody sneezes, let's say, I don't know, they cover themselves with their elbow or their inner elbow, into their arm, but let's say some of it still gets into the air. Is it spread that way?
Well, there's most of this virus spread is via droplets, and droplets are larger particles that come out when a person sneezes or coughs or laughs, and they are large, and so if you're within 6 feet of somebody, you are at risk of getting infected.
Mm-hmm.
These large droplets don't travel very far, but they're droplets, and so they can land on surfaces, and we do know that this virus can survive on various surfaces for several hours to a day or two, depending on the surface, and that's the reason we recommend hand sanitization, hand washing, because if you touch that surface and then touch your eye or your mouth, you can become infected. As to whether it's truly airborne, I think we need more data. A true airborne disease would be measles. And if 9 people are in a room, 10 people are in a room, and they're not immune to measles, 9 of them will get measles, no matter how far they are in that room, because it becomes airborne.
Now,
this probably doesn't travel that far and doesn't infect people at that sort of distance for the most part, as far as we know.
Okay, let's say we're going through a drive-thru or picking up a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts or picking up a Big Mac or something. We're going through a drive-thru and the person hands you a bag with your food or hands you the cup of coffee, you know, that you've ordered. Could it be transferred from that cup? In other words, the person that poured the cup of coffee and through that drive-through window hands you that cup of coffee. You then take hold of that cup of coffee and pay, you know. Could it be transferred on that cup? And how about dollar bills going from one, you know, there's transactions that are still done even to this day if you're picking up prescriptions or items and groceries at the store and you're using cash. So is it transferable on those kind of materials?
Well, first of all, before you eat your donut, I'm going to ask you to sanitize your hands.
Okay.
And you know, it's going to be a matter of what we call inoculum and how many viruses. So theoretically, if there were enough viruses and you touch the bag and then touch your mouth, it's probably eating the virus is probably not going to be what infects you. The virus will have to go through the stomach where it's acidic. It's really touching the bag and then touching your face or your eye. So again, carry your hand sanitizer or wash your hands before you touch the surface and then eat.
My final two questions for you. If we continue to, as the Governor Lamont is asking us all to do, to self-quarantine and stay and congregate in 5 people or less and stay 6 feet apart from each other for the entire month of April, in addition to what we've already accomplished in the 3 weeks in March, is there a remote possibility that we can salvage some of the spring or even the summer by lessening some of those restrictions if we are strict throughout the rest of the month of April?
You know, it's really hard to say. I've heard the peak in Connecticut can be in several weeks. I've also heard that other models predict a peak later on, possibly in May.
I heard 2 weeks from now, in mid-April.
Mid-April, but I've heard of other models that predict it a little bit later. Hmm. You know, the more strict we are about social distancing, I think the sooner this is going to decrease. I can't tell you it'll ever go away.
That's
but,
good.
You know, I don't know. I would love to salvage the spring.
we all would.
Get a day off and go outside, but, you know, it's We just all have to be patient.
I can imagine. Listen, my final question for you is that, you know, it's peaked. I mean, not peaked. It's very prevalent here in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, they say, is the epicenter, Connecticut, particularly lower Fairfield County. But it really hasn't spread to certain parts of the country too drastically. Let me be more clear. Yet we hear forecasts of upward of $200,000 on a national level. Are those realistic numbers considering where we are right now and going into the warmer weather?
Yeah. Well, I think they are. Those numbers are possible. There are areas of the country that have less coronavirus. There are areas of the country that really haven't started with the social isolation
policy.
And
they're less populated, so yeah.
And I think it's really time for everybody to take this seriously, whether or not you have coronavirus in your community. Try not to let it spread within your community.
Sure.
All it takes is one person, and that one person can spread to a little over two people, and then those two people to another two people, and soon you will have it in your community. So I think communities that don't have a lot of coronavirus are fortunate at this time, and I hope they heed the advice to really stay home and try to keep this virus from spreading in their communities. But given what I've read about in New York, I think it is possible that we're going to reach that 100,000 mark. I'd like you to have me on in a month and say that I'm wrong.
I hope you are too. I really do. I can't thank you enough for all your time with us this morning. I mean, you're so candid with us. It's the third time that you've been on with us. You are a favorite with our listeners. We always hear from them after you've been on because you're calming, you're straightforward, you're a straight shooter. You give us the good, the bad, the ugly, which is what we pride ourselves on here on this show. We don't subscribe to hype. We don't subscribe to panic. It's fact over fiction, no rumors. And that's why you're so popular with us and with our listeners. And I can't thank you enough. And hopefully you'll be able to join us once again, maybe in a couple of weeks. And see how we are then.
Hopefully with good news.
There you go, Doc. Yes, that would be nice. Thank you again so much. Really appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you then. How about that?
All right. Certainly. Thanks a lot.
It is our pleasure. That, folks, is Dr. Virginia Byluck. She is the chief infectious disease of the Hospital of Central Connecticut. Let me give you those hotlines as well before we take a break. Please write these phone numbers down. I'll give you an extra second. Grab a piece of paper, a pen or pencil that's closest to you. There are two numbers. The local Greater Hartford number is 860-972-8100. That's 860-972-8100. There is a toll-free number for those of you outside the immediate Greater Hartford area. It is toll-free at 833-621-0600. Once again, it's toll-free 833-621-0600. Those are the phone numbers for you to obtain either, actually, ask questions answered, and if they're if you're getting answers that don't that maybe scare you a little bit, hopefully they'll put you at ease. But if it makes you think a little bit more, where you think you possibly could have it, that would you would actually ask for a prescription for a coronavirus test.